Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Welcome to a post-lunch recording of the IGN UK Podcast. I know. I had pizza for lunch, which has made me a little bit sleepy. I won't lie. It was good pepperoni pizza, in case you're wondering.
And a burrito.
Very nice.
Oh, burrito is always good. What did you have, Emma?
I had burrito and fries.
Oh.
Very nice.
See, I'm kind of... burrito is one of my favourite things, but I was, you know, the pizza was paid for by someone else, so can I complain about that?
So if this episode's bad, it's because we just, the rhythm's wrong.
Exactly, we're too full of hot food. We've got hot food, but will we have hot takes? That's the question on this week's IGN UK podcast. Me, Simon Cardy, Emma Matthews.
Hello.
Hello.
Matt Jones.
Yeah, I didn't forget your name.
I wondered. You had a glint.
There was a moment there.
Yeah, we've got, you know what, we've got so much to talk about this week. I'm going to tell you now, there's no endless search, because frankly we've got a swell of things, so many games for once that we've actually played, and you know, a film that we didn't play, we watched. I've gone mad. Right, first up, change of mood, innit, we are going to talk about Hogwarts Legacy. Obviously we've spoken more in detail about this in the past, about how obviously the creator of Harry Potter, J.K. Rowling, said some pretty nasty stuff about trans people on Twitter, and we do not agree with that. We don't endorse those views in any way. If you decide to play this game, that's your choice. I'm not gonna, you do what you want. I don't care what you do, but we have to raise those concerns. It's not, we're not being told to raise those concerns, we just personally want to raise those concerns because it's an important issue for us. That being said, we are going to speak about the game, because Emma,
it'd be like telling the ice cream man not to sell ice cream.
Well, exactly. You've got... We're not saying, you know, we're not telling you to play it, we're not telling you not to play it, but we are going to tell you about what Emma has played of it, which is, you know, a fairly decent chunk of this game, which... Do you know what? This game has also snuck on me, and the fact that it's out in like 2 weeks?
It's really soon.
Well, I did not know that game was so soon. Considering even that we have really not really played it until now, Emma. You went all the way to the old Harry Potter studios to give it a go.
I did.
And is it... Do you know what? For a few months I was thinking, do you know what? I'm not too worried about this game. It doesn't look too good. These round of previews, though, suggest it might actually be quite fun. Did you find it quite fun?
I'm still undecided on it overall. I think if you're a fan and you're really interested to see, you know, what is Hogwarts like? This is the first time you're going to be seeing Hogwarts as an entire
outside
castle.
Of Lego.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, in the movies and stuff, and in like old games, you're sort of seeing just parts of the castle.
Yeah, so they're levels, really, aren't
exactly.
they?
Exactly. It's more of a level than an entire place, and it's interesting to see like what does that look like as an actual thing that's built that you can walk around. I spent quite a long time like just walking around some of the hallways and sort of outside, and it's interesting to see, yeah, like there's lots of students around, like it feels like it is alive with people.
Yeah,
some of like the like best parts that I've seen so far are when you're listening to people just talking, having a conversation.
See, that's what I want this game, you know, to lean into more, because like when I did, I've read all the Harry Potter books and I used to enjoy them a lot, and just the world and the people and the weirdness and the funny stuff going on is what drew me to it, not necessarily endless duels and spells and battles. And from what I've seen in this game, it is much more combat heavy than I expected. I thought it would be more puzzle solvey, like fun like little quests to go on, whereas from what I've seen, it's a lot of students just using unforgivable curses on each other.
That is a bit
so
scary.
They've become extremely forgivable curses.
It's quite odd.
Yeah, so the combat is interesting in that it seems very deep. I've only seen some of it. We've seen quite a bit in gameplay showcases as well before. You have a lot of these spells that are going to combo together. And it's sort of cool when you're in like a big battlefield and you're against like, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 enemies, you know, switching between them and like cooldowns and stuff on the spells. Like, I'm interested to see like when the game does release and you do sort of get access to all of those spells, how they're going to work together.
That is what surprised me. I watched it and heard people compare it to DMC. I did not expect it to look or feel like Devil May Cry.
They have a combo meter for you.
Yeah.
We get an S like, rank for you.
But yeah, I'm kind of... I watched the preview we put out on IGN, which was quite positive towards the game. But I was still watching it going, I don't know if I'm quite seeing what I'm hearing if necessarily about the game. It seems... I don't know. Yeah.
You're still undecided also.
I don't know. I just want to... I don't think I'm going to play this game anyway. I've kind of made that decision.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, if from an open world Harry Potter game, I'd want a bit more. I feel like I'd want more levity, more. I think that does exist in the world from what I've seen. There's like weird little mini games. But yeah, just the. It seems like the standard structure of the game revolves a lot more around going out and killing evil people and goblins and things. And
we ran a good social video of us exploding another wizard. You're not even going to get in trouble for it.
Yeah, like, can you, like, you're using, like, Crucio, which obviously what that burn basically burns people from the inside. It doesn't kill them. It just causes, like, unspeakable pain
it's
on them.
It's like torture, like the torture.
Yeah,
like,
are you actually killing things and people in this game? Or are they kind of like, is it Spider-Man? Are they just, like, stunned
no,
on the floor?
They explode.
They will disappear from the floor afterwards.
Yeah.
I think, like, the difference here, I guess, is that when you watch the movies and the books and stuff, you've gone sort of from being a tiny little kid as Harry and Ron and Hermione, and then it's got darker
as it's
gone.
This one, you're a 17-year-old.
This one, you're straight away, you're a fifth year. So immediately it's like, okay, you can get very serious spells quite quickly, and I think it seems like that's what they want to do with it. They do want to go in at sort of like the darker end to begin with.
Like, yeah, I've seen like you can, it's not really got, it's weird, if you're going that way, it feels like it should have like a morality meter, like a Mass Effect or like a, I don't know, an Infamous or something. But it feels like it doesn't, it just like, yeah, if you want to be evil, go for it. Like, I don't, like, what is the, like, did you get an idea of what the actual rough like, story of this game is?
Pretty much just what we've already heard about it, of that, yeah, you're a fifth year that's starting at Hogwarts and you're able to manipulate ancient magic. Like, that's a talent you have personally.
Naturally.
Yeah. And, sort of in the background, you've heard about this goblin rebellion, and that is also
bloody
happening.
Goblins.
But yeah, like,
what are they up to?
Something's rebellion. Going on. Yeah.
Did that make it into the final preview? By the way, that's been my favourite thing this week. That you just had a note in the preview that said, "What are the goblins up to?"
what is going on there? Yeah, I think it's strange because I feel like we have seen a lot of like the combat and spells stuff. Like, we've seen that a lot in the gameplay showcases and like state of play and stuff. But I feel like there's still, for a game that's this big, we still haven't seen so much of it. And it is out in 2 weeks.
It kind of compares to how I felt. It seems like, I don't want to put a hex, so to speak, on this. But kind of, I felt similarly when I played the preview build of Forspoken. And that hasn't, I haven't played the full game, and some people do like it, but it hasn't, generally it's underwhelmed, I think, critically. And I'm kind of getting a bit of this feeling. It's like, I played with the combat of Forspoken, thought, oh, there's some promise in this. And then people played Hogwarts Legacy and gone, oh, there's some promise in this combat. It's whether it actually does deliver that promise later down the road, or it just becomes you standing 20 meters away and just mashing one button of spells at people. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the problem I had with the combat section, was that because there are so many spells and we had access to like some of them, and I didn't have any time to sort of get used to how do these work together, like how do they combo.
You needed Alohomora to unlock more of them.
Yeah, I felt like I needed more time to sort of get used to the system.
You needed to Accio a strategy guide.
There you go.
It's weird how much, despite me not consuming
I don't care
content
about Harry
for years,
Potter at all.
How much it just
you know, all this
seeped
stuff
into the
lecture. Yeah.
Like, actually, I mentioned Alohomora. Isn't that a weird thing of like, you can use Alohomora, but it actually turns into an actual lock-picking minigame. It doesn't unlock a lock.
Yeah, which is
the point of the spell.
It's an interesting choice.
I saw Knock at the Cabin last night, and Rupert Grint was in the audience.
Oh,
and I was
surprised. He's in the film.
He's in the film, yeah, of course. And I'll talk about that more next week if I'm on, if I get around to it.
We'll
but it was surprised me just how much it like mattered to me. Like, oh my god, that's that. Yeah, like that's a few. But I don't really care about these movies at all.
Yeah,
everyone. I guess we all grew up with it.
It's like, inescapable.
Yeah, it was happening at the time.
Which is it's a shame. but yeah, are you kind of? Are you positive about like? Do you think it's going to be a good game? Is what I'm basically asking. Are you feeling good about it? More than you were when you walked into it, anyway.
I'm still kind of. I was kind of neutral going in. I still feel kind of neutral because I feel like even though I did get to see a little bit more, I still haven't seen that much more than what they've already showed of the game.
Yeah, like there's still lots of questions I think people have. It's like, how open is it? Like, can you just get on a broomstick and fly to like Hogsmeade or something like from the castle? Or
so I flew around the castle a little bit in the grounds, but not like anywhere else.
What kind of Nimbus was it?
Yeah, what broom you rocking?
It didn't even have a name as far as I'm aware. But this, like, it is set in like the late 1800s, so maybe they're developing that stuff. Yeah, I don't know. Early maybe we don't have a name yet. But yeah, I'm still like undecided on it, and I feel like the spell based like combat is the thing that I was the most interested in, and it's still the thing that I think is the most interesting. But I think just by having a bit of a wander around Hogwarts, like, if you're a fan of it and you're looking
got,
for
like feel
little
it,
Easter eggs, and you just want the feel of going around this magical school, I think from what I've seen so far, it looks like they've done a pretty good job at achieving that.
Yeah, it looks like they've got the look and the feel of it right. I am intrigued for reviews of this just to see, if it does develop into an actual good, like, competent, like, RPG game, because we still, like I said, we don't know a lot about it. Like, it, I want good games. I'm not going to, like I said, I probably won't play this one.
Before we sat down in this conversation, I was like, I kind of thought that it'd be like a middling third-person action game.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I really like about the Yakuza games is just like hanging around in like Kamurocho, right? Like the sense of place is important.
Yeah.
And it could do basically nothing else. But if I just get to occupy this location, hang out somewhere that I really care about, then I imagine that probably would appeal to people.
Why don't we talk about some games that's all good about vibes?
I just want to say, I've been very positive about this so far, but I'm not going to play this thing.
No.
I want to make sure I get that on the recording.
Yep, there you go. We can, exactly. Why don't we, like I said, why don't we talk about games that are kind of all about the vibe and hanging out with people, or, on the other hand, maybe should be, but don't let you sometimes. First up, Fire Emblem Engage. A series which, well, especially the last game was all about, not all about, it's a lot about tactics battling, but half of the game is all about hanging out at school with people.
Significant more amount of hanging out in the previous
one. That's why I haven't played Engage yet. I did enjoy Three Houses quite a bit. I wasn't as mad on it as a lot of people were.
Which house did you do?
Do you know what? I couldn't even remember. The blue one, I think.
Nice, cool.
Yeah, whichever they were. But that game trailed off in the second half for me.
Oh, it definitely falls apart, yeah.
But I did enjoy the social sim aspect of it because I'm a huge Persona fan, which we'll also get on to in a bit. But yeah, it seems like that's what I was thinking about playing Engage just because, you know, I like to like a bit of Fire Emblem. But it seems like this one, they've gone heavy on the tactics and not so heavy on the hanging out at school, Matt.
Most of the characters in this one are significantly less interesting than the previous. And that would be a real negative if you came in with Three Houses and you know, that was the sort of stuff that you were particularly interested in. But I'd gotten into series with Awakening, and I played the one after that I can't remember the name of, and then Three Houses 2.
Yeah.
So I've been a fan of the series for ages, and I think that the tactical combat in it is basically unsurpassed by anything else, really. Like, I love my XCOM. I did play a little bit of Midnight Suns, and I think that's pretty cool too, but it ain't nothing compared to Fire Emblem. Might as well, you can leave them for all I care.
That's what, like, I feel like that's what, and that's what a review said. If you want a really good tactics battler, then this game is for you. Like it, like you said, it's, they're almost unmatched in that area. But I feel a lot of people, like me, were relatively new to the series, and kind of Three Houses was what they enjoyed, and they really enjoyed the social sim aspect of it. It's a slightly odd decision. They've just not completely got rid of it from what I've heard, but severely reduced it.
But just the characters just don't have any riz, you know? Like, absolutely none of it.
Fire Emblem, no riz.
Yeah,
that's what it
no
should
riz
be.
No riz edition, like, I think that like all of the interest in the characters for me is just entirely mechanics based.
Yeah.
There's a guy called Louis who is a knight with like the, you know, the big armor, and he's got a lance, and he's unkillable. I'm playing on hard. He's like my go-to guy, and
I love
him. Do you
have permadeath as well?
I don't have permadeath. I have, like, until the end
coward.
Of the...
Playing hard, but no permadeath.
Yeah, but I want to keep them, but I'm even using that strategically. I'm like, oh, I can afford to have this unit die yeah. as long as I get to the end. Otherwise, I'd be save scumming it anyway, right? Yeah. Like, I'm just making it for my own use.
But can you not go, like, I don't know, for example, go and eat some soup with Louis as a nice little hangout?
He, like, his weird thing is that he just likes to watch people have conversations. Okay. So any, like...
So he's a creep.
Yeah, yeah. If you have a social, it's weird too because he just likes observing people going about their day.
Okay.
And then one of the conversations that you have with him is like, if you knew that they didn't like this, you'd stop, right? And he's like, yeah, of course. But he doesn't take that as a leap to just not do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, just go. It's a suggestion. People yeah. don't like this.
Yeah, yeah. yeah, he's a weird dude. And like, yeah, nobody like this. The one of the other guys who's kind of a powerhouse. Mm. I think he's cool because he rides a horse and he's like pretty powerful. But his whole thing is that he doesn't really have very big muscles, so he's constantly talking to people about how they get their muscles and stuff like that. Ooh. Like, this just, it sucks. It's not interesting. But like, the tactic stuff is cool. Normally you would have been able to partner up with any unit that you were standing next to, but now there are specific units that can do that. And there's this ring system where if you've got it equipped on a character, you start with about 3 or 4 of them and you unlock them as the story continues, but they confer a specific power.
Mm.
And as you grow in link with that ring, then you unlock different weapon proficiencies. So that's how all of the like the level up stuff works, is you need to have a ring that wouldn't necessarily work with the character now for them to gain levels, for them to become really powerful units.
And that's the engage mechanic.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah. And when they engage, then they gain an extra powerful ability. So with Sigurd's ring, you can move through units with an attack.
Okay.
And then move backwards after you've done that too. But you have to engage first.
Yeah.
And there's one of them where it's got a power called Warp Ragnarok, where you can move 10 spaces and then attack, which is really useful because sometimes the maps will split your units up now.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have somebody really far away and basically just be playing on two battlefields at once.
Are you having, like, I don't know how much, but you've played, are you having, despite the social go, like, are you... Yeah. Still, like, is the tactic stuff still taking you through?
It's
are you enjoying
incredible.
It enough?
Yeah, genuinely, yeah. It's one of the best of them mm-hmm. in terms of tactics. And I think it might be because I'm playing on hard, so I'm actually using the, like, long grass
properly
and the castles
it.
And stuff, and
yeah.
making sure I'm actually, like, thinking about
tactically.
Unit strategies. There's one character that I've got as well, where if she's in long grass, which gives you an avoidance bonus, then she's more likely to critical hit. So I've been building her to gain even more avoidance so that she'll just, like, sit somewhere on the map, never get hit, and then constantly be dealing crits. Mm. And as soon as games let me do stuff like that, I'm like, oh, I'm in. Like,
yeah.
my brain is only filled up with numbers and strategy.
Like, sound like we're too down this game. We gave it a 9 out of 10. It's apparently, like you're saying, if you're into a tactics game, it's, you know, up there as what you can play. Mm-hmm. But
if you were into Three Houses, it might not be yours.
Yeah, you know, that. I like when people change things up,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah, I'd rather that. I'd rather that than get
just
the
three
same
houses
thing every time.
To
yeah.
four houses or whatever.
Yeah.
Are you a Fire Emblem fan at all, Emma?
Not really. Like, I haven't played the games. The most I sort of know about Fire Emblem characters is through Smash Brothers.
Cool.
So are any of those characters in this game?
Marth's in it, yeah. I think Roy's in it later.
Oh, that's cool.
Do you like summon them? Are they like...
They're the rings.
Oh, so the rings are...
Yeah.
Oh.
You're basically like partnering up with them. And they can occasionally do extra attacks, but only for the character that's wearing the ring. Then that's who you engage with. So you, like, form into one person.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty
cool. You're notoriously a big anime fan.
Yeah, yeah.
How's the big anime story in this one?
It's got a really good anime, like, intro. It's got, like, a song as soon as you boot it up. It's a pretty good montage.
Mm-hmm.
But, nah.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like if you're looking for a good tactics game and you have the Nintendo Switch, check out Fire Emblem Engage. I am... not an anime fan at all. I think that's been on record. Or,
however.
Which, yeah, surprised people when Persona is one of my ultimate, you know, my favourite game series,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, let's face it, they're heavily anime in nature.
4 is basically just JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Yeah.
So
from what I've told, I've never watched JoJo, and I never bloody... Well, I might do one day. Persona 4...
I don't think you'd like it, personally.
Can I turn it into a 100-hour RPG?
Mm, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It'd be a worse story, but I'd like it more.
Yeah. Persona 4, Persona 5, I played years ago. Absolutely love them. Two of my favourite games of all time. Never actually played Persona 3, though, just because I've always been holding out for a re-release. And they've finally bloody done it. So I played it on the Switch, which is now just, I've decided, the perfect place for Persona. Like, originally, a lot of people in the West started with Persona on Vita, on Persona 4 Golden.
It's weird thinking about how RPGs, because they've got that barrier of like, oh, I need to boot the console up, and yeah, then I need to get my save, and then I need to load in.
Mm-hmm.
How, if they're already this many hours, then that really like takes the wind out of the sails, yeah, if you want to play it. But booting it up on the Switch, I'm like, I'm playing it within 10 seconds.
Exactly. Right?
It really does make you want to...
The rhythm of Persona games is just unbeaten for me, especially on a handheld, because I can like do all the social sim stuff, the story stuff, and pay attention fully to it. And then when I get to a better slice, you know what, and do an hour of dungeon crawling and go around and do battles, I can just play that while watching the football.
A lot of games learned this lesson that they need like downtime.
Yeah.
They need the game, and then they need the like other bit of the game. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed way more games doing it probably since Persona came around.
Yeah. I very much enjoyed Persona 3, though. I annihilated it. I probably had it about 10 days. I finished it in like 61 hours, which if you work that out, if you're good at maths, that's around at least 6 hours a day I was playing that game.
That's a part-time job that you just did.
Yeah. Exactly. It was basically do my job, play for an hour at lunch, play for like 4 or 5 hours after work. And that was my life for a good bit. And do you know what? I was having a bloody lovely time, because Persona 3... not quite as good as 4 or 5, in my opinion, but still very good. It's a much more... Have you ever played Persona 3?
No.
Okay. It's a much more contained story. You can tell it's an older game. It's more limited in its combat and in its social stuff. Like, there's only like 5 or 6 different locations around the city you can actually visit.
Convincing stuff in it? Do you have to like talk to the monsters as well that you can...
No, it's right. More... It has something different, which is a card system. So after every battle, it'll basically like... do like the thing of like show you like 4 cards and then shuffle them up, and you have to watch them to pick which one you want. It'll either be like a new persona or an experience boost or a coin boost. So I really like that part of it, and I do wish that was in later Persona games, but I enjoyed Persona 3 quite a lot. Like I said, it's a much more contained story. Again, it's you and a bunch of school kids trying to stop the end of the world with some weird things going on and otherworldly. And as always, not really a spoiler, you're going to try and fight something equal to God at the end, because that's what you do in every Persona game. And they're not too hard, especially on normal, except when you get to the end and inevitably you're in like an hour and a half long battle that's just grinding for a long time. But you know what? I loved every second of it.
I love him four, though, during that like hour and a half long battle. The music like crescendos at some point. You go like, oh, I'm really tired. And then it goes like, no, I can keep going.
It's on game 3 and 4 are now on Game Pass as well, as long with 5 Royal. So if you've never played Persona and you have Game Pass, check out Persona. I would say don't start with 3, start with 4 or 5, because 3 is a bit, it is a bit more limited. I enjoyed 3 knowing more about Persona. I feel like it could, it's a bit more of a slow burn.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay. Yeah, like 4 and 5. I'd probably do 4 then 5. I think four is your favorite.
Yeah.
5 is my favorite, but they're both like amazing.
I think
5's
got like the, such an interesting like UI design, like this aesthetic of
the style.
It's unbeaten basically in any game. Nothing quite looks like it.
5 has the style, the combat. For me, it has. I prefer the cast of the characters, although I know 4.
But I prefer them in 4.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I prefer the story of 4. I think 4 has the best story of them all. But 5 has some of the better dungeons. They're both. Like arguably equally as good, but yeah
it's like it's the difference between cake and pie, right? Like you have a delicious treat.
I do
either
prefer
way.
Cake though. But yeah, Persona, just play Persona if you haven't given it a go. Like they are all like, you know, 80 to 100 hours apart from 3, which is a bit shorter, but god, they're just, you can
so
kind of half play
job.
Them exactly. They're all just good turn based like it's kind of the step up. I feel like if you're a huge Pokemon fan and you feel like, oh, I've grown out of Pokemon, they're too easy these days, Persona's kind of the next step up. It's similar, it's the, you know, the rock, paper, scissors element combat.
And it's got, like, thing catching, in a
way. Exactly. It's kind of, I feel like it's almost like the adolescent to, you know, if Pokemon's baby's
it's
first
the
RPG, it's the...
to Pokemon Squirtle.
Yeah, exactly. And then you can move on to, I don't know.
Fire Emblem,
maybe, maybe. But yeah, go on, give Persona 3 a go. And Persona 4, and Persona 5, because... they're just very good. I didn't love 3. I don't know if this is controversial. 3's music didn't quite hit me.
No, you didn't like baby.
No, it wasn't working for me.
We've done a best,
too much. But you do have a dog you can get in your party in 3, so that's good.
Have we done a best modern JRPG list for the site?
We must have. We've done definitely best RPGs. I don't know if we've done just JRPGs. Mm. But yeah.
I'll put a little note on that. I'll put a little pin there. Maybe that'll go on the website.
From one set of Game Pass games to another one. Out of nowhere, we're recording this on Thursday, little peek behind the curtain. Last night, out of nowhere, Xbox just released a game like within an hour of announcing
Mad
it.
Mad lads.
I love that, though. I love it when that happens. It's like, oh, this looks cool. Oh, I can play it now. Great.
It's not good. So were you
watching the show live?
I was. Yeah. So yeah. I was watching it. If you weren't watching the Xbox Direct, which I actually thought was very good, they just put the developers
forefront. Yeah, I was busy at film screening, so I couldn't make it, unfortunately.
It was really good, though, because like, there'd been this rumour / leak that Tango Gameworks, the developers of Evil Within and Ghostwire Tokyo, were going to reveal a new game, and we were like, I think everyone's like, oh, that would be cool. Probably be something grim and horror-y.
And it won't come out until 2025.
Exactly. And then out of nowhere pops this thing that at first I was like, is this Sunset Overdrive 2 or something? So it has that sort of like comic book art style. At first I thought it was an open world game. It's not an open world game. And then I've realised, oh, this is a rhythm action game, which I do tend to like, but I'm normally never really that good at. But I always like giving them a go. And the art style's clicking, the music's clicking, the actual, for once, humour is clicking for me in a game, because I find that's very hard to do.
I'm playing in Japanese, so maybe we're laughing at different points. But there is just a like earnestness to it that I really like.
It's like a playable Saturday morning cartoon rhythm action game where you play as someone who gets a mechanical arm, but then accidentally basically gets an iPod turned into that, like, Tony Stark with his
heart. It's going to be like the plot of Crank. Where he was, when I first saw that, I was like, oh no, he's got to have Crank music keep going. What if his battery runs out?
I think we've all given this a game ago. And I haven't even mentioned the most surprising thing. Yeah, it just dropped out of nowhere. I think everyone's like, oh, this game looks cool. I hope it's going to be good. And then you just went, and it's available now. I was like, what? Hi-Fi Rush, that is the name of the game, in case I haven't said it.
Oh yeah, we didn't say it.
You can download that for free now on your Game Pass subscription. And I think we've all played a similar amount. I've played the first two levels, you guys played the first one.
I want to say as well, it's the first time that I've taken the opportunity to just play an Xbox game in the office. Mm. Like, did that add to it? I think it was, yeah. That I was like, I've got to get this in so that I can do the podcast. But like, being able to just be like, hang on, this is for work.
Exactly. Nice little lunch break with Hi-Fi Rush. We've all played it. I'll just start off by saying I think I'm in love with this game. I think it's absolutely brilliant, and not only because you get 9-inch nails within an hour of it, it's just, it fixes something that I often have problems with rhythm action games and just rhythm games in general. It's just, if you aren't that good at them, it sounds shit. But this one, if you time your attack slightly off the beat, it kind of auto-corrects it for you. It doesn't give you as good a score, but it makes it look and sound as if you did, which I really appreciate. Who else is loving this game?
I spent probably the first, like, 2-3 minutes of it just making the character, like, trying to make the main character walk offbeat. Mm-hmm. Like, the steps, I don't know how they've done it, but they've made sure that the animation priority is always, like, within the rhythm.
It's amazing.
I just, like, deliberately tried to break it and couldn't. And
the
I'm
whole
like,
world
how
is
you?
Just in rhythm with the bit. It's like, did anyone have played Sound Shapes on Vita and PS3 back in the day? Really good game, but that was kind of its gimmick, is that it was a platform where every, like, the song would build as you go through, and every element, everything would, like, bounce to the beat. And that's what this game does as well. Like, vents, like, lights, they were all just, like, strobing or going off to the beat. And it's just, like I said, it's just, I'm a sucker for anything that colourful. And it's just nice that from the developers of The Evil Within and Ghostwire Tokyo was colourful. It was just, you know, it was a horror game. But this is just so vibrant and fun, and I just really want to get home and play more. Emma, are you enjoying it?
I'm really enjoying it, yeah. I think what's really nice about it as well is it starts off so simple. Mm-hmm. Like, as you're sort of moving through it, it's like, okay, you've got these two buttons that you need to worry about. Just try and be in time. And even as you're going, the game's like, it's okay if you're not in time. Like, you know, we've got other things that can, like, help you out. Like, there's these little robots that can give you hints. Mm-hmm. And you can, like, learn more about the attacks. And then as you go through the level, it gets a little bit more, like, complicated. And it's like, oh, you can dodge. Oh, you can do this, like, ground pound kind of attack. And yeah, I'm really enjoying it so far. Like, I think I like a lot of, like, rhythm games anyway, so it's nice to have one that's like an action game. Like, I play a lot of Rock Band still.
Nice.
Yeah.
which is amazing.
It did give me memories of, yeah, playing. Like, I think it's mainly because it's actually rock music I recognise, which is always nice.
I listened to that Black Keys song quite a lot while I was in university.
So I remember seeing them. What happened to them?
They're still around.
Yeah. They're still playing. What else was I going to say about this game? I had something lined up.
It does the cool Enter the Spider-Verse animating on twos sometimes as well, which I really like. But the animation is really well done.
Good.
I'm shocked.
I don't know why. I was expecting, because this game's just shadow dropped out of nowhere, that it would be rough around the edges. I have no reasoning for that. I was just thinking, is this unfinished? Oh, no, it's really polished.
Yeah.
I just did the second boss battle, which is like the first boss battle of the game, despite it being to a Nine Inch Nails song. The song's good. The boss battle's, I think, slightly naff.
I think it's too locked to the beat. There are some parts of it where nothing's happening because it just needs to catch up.
It does look cooler.
Look really cool.
He'll like kind of stand there with his arms out, like just waiting for...
And you can't do anything as well sometimes.
Also, there are like bits where the fights end and it just kind of needs to catch up with like the song.
It's always
needs to
hard,
end.
Isn't it? Of like when it's so tied to the beat like that. But second boss battle I thought was really fun. Like, it has lots of different stages. You're having to... By then you're like... I'm only, like I said, at the end of the second level. In that second level, you get so many new abilities. Like, I've got this magnet grapple thing. I've got this... I can now, like, summon the helper cat you have, which is very good to, like, basically shoot people for me. I've got this new special, like, super move, which, if you push in both triggers, you get a special move. The one I've currently got is turning my guitar into a skateboard and ramming into people.
That sounds cool.
I just love how much it's throwing at me.
I really like that it's just become like an actual Devil May Cry, like not just
another game that you could actually compare to Devil May Cry quite a bit. Like, I hope it. I have no idea how long this game is.
I think it's about 6-7 hours.
Okay, that's good. I mean, I was hoping. I was worrying it'd be like 3 hours and done, because sometimes these games can be. But I want to go back and play more.
Yeah, same.
If it can like maintain that level of like throwing more at you for the entire time.
Yeah, let's go home early and play Hi-Fi Rush. And more than anything, I just want to see what songs come up, because I'm just hoping.
Yeah,
don't worry, I like Nine Inch Nails. I'm not a super massive fan. I listen to them every now and then. I just want one of my favourite songs to just pop off there just out of nowhere.
It'd be funny. I also imagine that it just changes genres at some point. Imagine just the trap song starts playing. That'd be cool.
That could be quite slow. It's just like boom.
Yeah.
Boom. You're just hitting on that beat. Would be quite slow. Hi-Fi Rush. If you've got the old Xbox, give it a bloody go, because it's very, very fun. Now we've got a couple of little things. This is my little catch-up corner. I wasn't on last week for once. Other people decided to speak, which is unreasonable, if you ask me.
We pushed you off.
Did you miss it? Did your week feel weird? You didn't have
did
your
I feel
usual
hollow
podcast?
Inside and bereft of any opportunity in life? No.
You got through it.
It's nice to have a break. I'm sure everyone else was very thankful to have a break from this rambling in their ears. But what I did do, I've now seen Steven Spielberg's new film The Fablemans twice. It's out in cinemas now today in the UK if you haven't seen it yet. It is such a lovely film. This is a beautiful film. If you don't know what it is basically him, Steven Spielberg, telling the story of his adolescence. And it's pretty, despite all the character names being changed, it's a one-to-one telling of him growing up and his parents' divorce and the family issues and the bits of the film I truly love, his like discovery of wanting to make films. And there's my favorite scenes in the film are the ones where he's just at like 14 going out and making a Western with friends. It's just
The only clip that I've seen of it is the David Lynch cameo where
that's the very end of the film.
Really nice.
Yeah. It's the last, like, this film it's just so nice. It's got all like the sweetness you'd expect from a Steven Spielberg film, but it's, you kind of let him off in this one because he's telling his own story. And it's just the very last shot of the film. It's not like anything emotional. It's not anything like meant to make you tear up. But something about the very, and I won't give it away because it's just a very good, like excellent moment. Very last like camera move in this film, like chokes me up, and I can't explain why without spoiling it completely. But
is it reference the thing that I've just said? Because I think I.
It's
might know
just
that.
After. Yeah.
Nice.
But yeah, this is just such a lovely film. I think it's just beautiful. And Steven
go check
Spielberg
out the work of the
good.
Up-and-coming director Steven Spielberg.
I just want to see it again. It's lovely. That's the film recommendation for this week. Steven Spielberg, little known director. This is something more little known. I can't remember if... I know Joe played this game and liked it, but I don't think he ever spoke about it on the podcast before he left. The Case of the Golden Idol.
I've seen this floating around.
So yeah. This is something that was like... I think we nominated in our best puzzle games of last year, but I hadn't played it at that point, and I feel really bad now because it is an excellent puzzle game. It's on Mac and PC. If it's on the old Steam. I think it's like £15.
Does it have kind of a horror tint to it as well?
Not really spooky. Horror, it's like a murder mystery detective. There are like kind of almost like culty elements in it so far. I'm only like an hour and a half in. I think it's only like a 5-hour, 6-hour game, but it's just a really good puzzle game. It's a really good detective game, which is what I didn't really feel like I got last year. I know a lot of people loved Immortality. I did really like it, but I never felt like a detective.
It's not very detective-y. No. Yeah, I think we talked about this on the show, that it just makes you feel like you're kind of clicking on stuff to get to advance the story.
This is as close to, and this looks like some people, as close to The Return of the Obra Dinn I've played since playing The Return of the Obra Dinn. I feel like I'm actually, like, it starts off very simple, this game. It basically... starts off with just one scene in front of you, and you can't move to different areas, and there'll be a murder taking place, there'll be things you can click on, notes you can read, and you basically, it's similar in every scene, there'll be to the right, there'll be like some words you have to slot in the middle, it will be like who's in this scene, you have to try and put names to faces and be like, okay, this person's this person from what I've worked out. And then on the left, it'll basically be the story of the murder, so like X killed X because of X in X. And you basically, when you're rooting around these scenes, you click on words and they'll go into the bottom of your screen. Basically, your inventory is just words that you then drop into these gaps. And once you've solved it, you've solved it. You could really just hard, you know, just like trial and error. But where's the fun in that? Try and work it out. And it's developed until I've played chapter 6. I don't know how many there are, but the last chapter I read was really good. It's basically, you go around this mansion, there's like 4 different rooms you can go around, and you're basically working out how this guest has died at this dinner. And the thing I'm really enjoying so far is like, it is telling one whole story. Like, there's characters appearing in some scenes that are in past ones, but you'd have no idea. You basically have to backtrack through those chapters to work out, okay, that guy looks like this guy from that one, so I know he's this person in this scene, despite there being no clues. It's just really clever. I've made
sounds
it sound
really complicated.
It's really the thing is, it's really not complicated. It's really simple. You just click on things, gather lots of words, and then basically just root around the scene and work out, well, this woman over here said that David has got to wake up at 3 a.m. to do something. And then you look in a different room and you see someone's got a note in their room saying, I must wake up at 3 a.m. So you've worked out, okay, David
that's
lives
David's
in...
David's no.
Yeah, that's David's room. I know David sleeps in this bed. And that's one of the things you've got to work out. Like, it is a simple game that makes you feel really clever. And that's what I love about
this. That's what
this.
You want. Yeah. It's nice when a game does that.
Like, The Return of the Obra Dinn is quite a complicated game, but when you break it down, it really isn't. You're just looking around and working out who's who. It's a big old game of guess who, but on an old ship... this game is just it just makes me feel really clever. It's only £15. I think it's 5 to 6 hours. If you're looking for a good detective game or a good puzzle game, I can't recommend anything more from the last year, I think, than The Case of the Golden Idol. So I'd really check
does
that
seem
out
my street.
Yeah, it's really
good. I loved Return of the Obra Dinn.
Oh, it's one of the best games like the last 10 years.
I'll give it one of those ever marks. I'll attach an ever there.
What's it? Oh, he must be close to Lucas Pope. Must
oh,
be close
God,
to a new
please.
Game.
Please, Lucas, what are you doing?
Come on, Lucas.
How many languages have
game.
You got left to translate it to?
Exactly. Right. We're on to some feedback. Has everyone got something to read feedback on? Emma, I think you're first up. I will first remind people IGN_UK feedback@IGN.com. We're currently on the topics of a lot of people have picked out a couple sent over remakes they'd like to see. I know you Matt and Dale last week spoke about that to quite some extent. I'm just going to throw mine out there. Just give me Red Dead 1 and Red Dead 2's engine. That's all I want. How hard can it be, Rockstar? Make more games, please. It's a simple one, but I want it.
But do you want Rockstar to do that, given their track record with doing remakes?
I trust them with Red Dead. They wouldn't fuck around with Red Dead. Because if they fucked around with Red Dead, they'd find out from me. You do not fuck around with Red Dead.
Just take your time, do it properly.
Emma, what's Lewis suggested?
So this is from Lewis Glover. Lewis says, hey IGN UK crew, I hope you're all doing well. You recently spoke about remakes you'd like to see with a few changes to the original game. For me, it was an easy answer. A remake of the Jak and Daxter trilogy as one seamless game.
One game? One game. That's a big old game.
I think this would be great for fans of the original trilogy, but also for Sony to gauge how much interest there is for Jak and Daxter before pursuing new games in the series, as well as a potential crossover with Ratchet and Clank.
Bring it all in.
I always thought that they were going to do that, like, because there were so many like in-between references to both games in them when they were released. I really thought that there was eventually leading up to it.
I do like Jak and Daxter. I like Jak and Daxter 1. I really like Jak and Daxter 2. I've never played 3.
It's not that great, honestly. Oh. I think 2 is the one, but maybe it's the Persona 4, Persona 5 thing. I think there are a lot of people that would go to bat for like the original
Jak. I think I just like the novelty of 2 kind of being an open world game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, yeah, the idea of you having this like kind of fun children's platformer and then the next one is like a like vaguely mature teen like shooter.
Yeah. It's kind of what Ratchet has done recently. They've kind of turned their levels into mini open world. And I'd play a new Jak and Daxter. I think Naughty Dog are past that stage, but yeah, let someone else do it.
I think it'd be really difficult as well to do Jak and Daxter as a like one game trilogy piece because they're so different, like 1 and 2 are. You know, the idea of it being
maybe
they
have to
like,
really gritty it up.
Yeah, totally. Give the first one. Give Jak a gun. Give child Jak a gun.
Lewis has got some ideas on how it would work. So Lewis says, I think the remake would benefit from stitching all three games together as one big 25 to 30 hour experience. Not only would this help for the story to feel more seamless, but I would hope they change the tone of each game to match each other. There we go. I would also hope they add a bit more combat to the first game and some missions from the second game to make it a bit easier where it was unnecessarily hard. Hope this makes sense and would love to hear your thoughts.
Actually, I'd play it. Really good idea. Yeah, I think I'd really like to play this.
I'd happily play it.
Lewis has thought about this a lot as well, you can tell.
Do you think it keeps Lewis up at night thinking, where is Jak and where is Daxter? I would play it. Let's get it going. Let's get that ball rolling.
You know, success of the Last of Us TV show. You know, they've got other projects. Yeah. Maybe we get a Jak and Daxter little animated show at some
point.
I do
think the last two Ratchet games are very good, but in my heart of heart, I still would prefer Jak and Daxter over Ratchet and Clank, I think. I don't know if that's... Is that controversial? I don't know. I don't know if I've burned some bridges there.
I feel like I want to see what you would do with Jak and Daxter now.
Me?
Yeah, you specifically. Simon Cardi and Jak and Daxter.
Probably play it.
Well, I've got a message from Scott Jones. Great last name, Scott. I wonder if we're distantly related. Jones isn't a common name. Hi all, just finished the latest pod and wanted to share two games I think about a lot and would love to see remade.
Another person being kept up by remakes. These people
probably
don't sleep.
A popular opinion, and I genuinely wish I'd thought of this. Soul Reaver 1 and 2. Absolutely love these. Well overdue more, but a remake with updated graphics and story by the teams behind God of War or Naughty Dog be something else. I don't know who's got the license to this now.
No,
I think
so this is one, and I know a certain Tamar Hussein is a big Soul Reaver fan. I've, you know, this is one on my list. Never played a Soul Reaver game, but I do know people desperately want a remake or a new one.
It's a little dated now, but it's just like got a style that isn't really replicated by much else.
Yeah, I feel like from what I know about it, it would be something that would go down very well now. Like, it's kind of more of a cult game that would now maybe breach more a bit into the mainstream. But yeah,
I feel like they were teasing one for ages. I can't even remember who they are. Like, is it Eidos?
I wouldn't be able to tell you who actually owns Soul
But then
Reaver.
I think Square sold a lot of licenses. This is a rabbit hole.
I know people
go
excited
down.
Because
we'll be here for hours.
In the Astro's Playroom, there's like a little Easter egg where it's like, are they teasing like Legacy of Kain? Are they teasing it? It's like, no, I think it's just a fun reference. But
yeah,
they might come back one day. Who knows?
And the second one from Scott is Snatcher for the Mega CD. If not familiar, it was a point and click with a story that was a mix of Blade Runner and The Terminator by one Hideo Kojima himself. I'd like to see this as a third-person detective adventure. Dale was talking about doing the original Metal Gears.
Yeah.
It'd be really fun to try and do a modern Snatcher as well.
Yeah,
in this same
again,
style.
I've not played
I haven't
Snatcher.
Either. This is one of,
I don't have
a gap
Mega
in
CD.
My knowledge.
But I would want to... From what I know about it, I would want to...
You're a games journalist, you don't have a Mega CD.
I know. Should I hand in my badge? My gun on my badge? I'd play it again. One I haven't played, but I would bloody play it.
Yeah. Scott also wants to say the sound of the Bioshock, but with a little bit of Dishonored and Deathloop in it.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Absolutely. We agree. And Matt have talked about this before. Me and Matt Perzo, like, yeah, big old Bioshock remake with changes. That would go down an absolute treat. I've got an email from Craig Watts who is changing up. We're back onto breakfasts, the big topic of the year. I think we spoke about this before. I don't really eat breakfast, but let's see what Craig has got to say about breakfast. Craig said he had a pretty weird breakfast today, so thought, why not write in? I like something hot in the morning. This sounds like the start of some sort of erotica or something.
Tell us more about it.
I like something hot in the morning, so normally have a few eggs and some hash brown type things. Got a ration the eggs recently, as there seems to be a shortage. Are people panic buying? This is like a little, it's almost like poetry.
like somebody would be listening to this podcast in the post-apocalypse. Yeah. Like, what was happening to the eggs at the time?
Is there an egg shortage? Has anyone else noticed that?
Actually, if I have heard this correctly, I'm going to put on my tinfoil hat here. You've actually got egg knowledge. They're being price gouged by the
Big Egg.
Yeah, by Big Egg.
Oh, no.
Humpty Dumpty himself is...
I'm not a big egg fan.
Or like
apart
eggs.
From in a cake or if I'm making a big old Yorkshire pudding.
What's your favourite
so
egg?
Versatile though.
What's your favourite egg?
I'll have scramble egg.
Yeah.
That's if I chose one way of eating just egg, you know. I'm choosing scrambled personally.
Oh, like a good fried egg personally. Yeah. Fried egg sandwich. Simple.
Something about a soft boiled egg. It doesn't sit well with me.
Pretty good.
Not sure about that one.
Marinate it in some soy sauce. Nah. Put it in a ramen. Nothing better.
That is good.
Bit of scrambled.
You've got to prepare in advance, though, with that, haven't you? You've got to be thinking ahead at least
exactly.
A day.
Exactly. Don't just accidentally. Let me whip up an onsen egg.
Anyway, now we get to the odd part of Craig's email where he's already got the eggs, he's already got the hash browns, and he said, anyway, just stuck a few burgers to bulk up the breakfast. Takes the same amount of time as the hash brown hybrids. I don't know what these hash brown hybrids are.
I want to know what's in them, yeah.
I lived in China for 8 years, and for 4 of those lived with my wife's family. They're from Sichuan, which is famous for spices.
Sichuan.
It's spelled differently to how I normally see it. Well, there we go. It's just famous for spicy food. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, there are no rules. They could all be spicy.
There's a good Sichuan place just around the corner from us. At the IGN studios. It's very nice.
There we go. Don't get me wrong. It was fucking amazing. This is just... and now we're on to cereals. Craig thinks that cereals suck. Cocoa Pops excluded.
Only if you eat them straight away, though. You can't have a soggy Cocoa Pop, can you?
No, you just get the chocolate. But the chocolate milk is quite good there.
It is. You've got to get the balance right, I think. Yeah. You still want a little bit of crunch.
I'm just imagining
but a little bit of chocolate milk too.
Kind of like not pouring out a whole bowl of Cocoa Pops, pouring basically just some onto a spoon with a little bit of milk and
just
eat
sort of
one bite.
Tease them over the milk. Yeah.
I feel like I have to drench them in sugar to enjoy them. Shredded wheat's another one. Who can enjoy one without sugar? That's true. Like Weetabix, I'll put a load of sugar on it if I have it.
It needs something. Yeah. Like I used to have sugar and now I think I'd go honey.
I go honey.
Because then it's a little bit smoother, you know?
Sliced banana.
I was one of those people that I much prefer hot Weetabix, like microwaving it. With a bit of sugar, yeah. Milk and sugar. Lovely. We're on to another breakfast thing from Craig. The packet of supermarket kebab meat.
Listen to last week's episode if you haven't, because it was disgusting.
The packet of... This is going back to... Oh, yeah, it was Alan's sister who... ate a packet of kebab meat from the supermarket for breakfast. Craig says, the packet of supermarket kebab meat I can't abide by, but I did used to eat, was Sainsbury's microwavable curries at my workplace for breakfast. So instead of kebab, he didn't have kebab meat, but he would have a microwavable curry for breakfast. How do we feel about that?
I'm kind of into that. It's all out for the day, yeah.
I just don't have an appetite anymore. Like, for the first 2 hours after I wake up, I feel like if I eat something, I might be ill. I just don't have an appetite.
I get that too. But I feel like on weekends, because I get up later, I'm sort of more ready to eat. I think it depends on the time of day for me, like what time I get up. If it's early, I can't even think about it. But if it's later, yeah.
This is the thing, though, and Craig goes on here. He was having these microwavable curries at his workplace for breakfast. My desk was near the kitchen. It was sweet. No one cared about the curry smell. It was really chilled out. I missed that place. I'm not going to lie. Like, Matt, if we were in the office together, or Emma, either of us, and I came in at like 9:30 and I could smell like a Rogan Josh next to me as I'm waking up to work, I'd be a bit like, mate, can you just go eat that in the kitchen? Like, I would not want to smell a curry at 9:30, I don't think.
It's pretty pungent, you're right, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like, not if I'm trying to have a nice, I don't know, salted caramel latte. I like something sweet in the morning to wake me up. Anyway, Craig says, respect the sea, take it easy, and have a curry for breakfast. I don't think I will. I did have a curry last night, though. A Jalfrezi, if you must know. There we go. IGN_UK feedback at IGN.com. If you've got remake and breakfast chat, I feel like that's what we're on to at the moment.
What's the theme from this episode as well that they can get in touch with? Best surprise launch? You talk about Beyonce if you want.
Yeah. I can't. When was the last time a game did just go?
Just dropped, yeah.
Bang, it's out.
One that I remember was Fallout Shelter.
Yeah,
I remember. That was good for a bit.
Yeah, they revealed Fallout 4, and then it was like, hey, we've got this little app you can download right now. And then it was really late for us in the UK, so it was like, okay, I've got to wait till the morning now. But that was pretty cool.
Yeah, there we go. Emma's kicked it off there. Surprise launches, breakfast, remakes, good stuff. IGN UK podcast at IGN. Well, fucked it up. IGN _ UK feedback at IGN.com. I've only said that probably 1,000 times. Music. God, we got some choices.
Should be Nine Inch Nails.
It's got to be a million by Nine Inch Nails. Let's bang that on. Beautiful. Have a lovely weekend.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.